Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Practice Perfect, 42 Rules for Getting Better at Getting Better, by Doug Lemoff, Erica Woolway, and Katie Yezzi. Foreword by Dan Heath. Narrated by Brett Berry.
Foreword by Dan Heath. In the summer of 2011, my wife, my parents, and I took a tour of a whiskey distillery in Scotland. The tour guide seemed almost catatonically bored. At each stop, she'd recite a memorized script and then ask, "Are there any questions?" But of course there weren't, because that would mean we'd be listening. And what I remember most about the tour, other than wishing we could skip ahead to the tasting, was that I spent most of my time thinking about Chris Rock. I'd been reading a book, Little Bets by Peter Sims, that described Rock's process in developing new material for his stand-up act. In preparing for one tour, Rock made between 40 and 50 appearances at a small club in New Brunswick, New Jersey. He'd show up, carrying a yellow legal pad with his ideas scribbled on it, and start experimenting with new bits. Sims writes, "He watches the audience intently, noticing heads nodding, shifting body language, or attentive pauses, all clues as to where good ideas might reside. In sets that run around 45 minutes, most of the jokes fall flat. But with time, he digs out the material that works. The jokes get sharper, and the transitions get tighter, and the delivery gets smoother. So if you've ever cracked up at one of Rock's lines, 'I live in a neighborhood so bad you can get shot while getting shot,' then you might have New Jersey to thank." By the time Rock performs the routine for an HBO special, or in an appearance on David Letterman, he has long since mastered the material, perfected it, and as a result, he'll give the illusion of effortlessness. Chris Rock is such a funny guy. A few months after the whiskey tour, I was giving a speech, and I caught myself telling a story the same rote way I'd told it a dozen times before, and a nasty thought struck. I am the whiskey tour guide. Thankfully, I stopped short of verbalizing this thought, thus avoiding what could have been a deeply confusing moment. In life, we'll face this choice again and again: to be the whiskey tour guide, or to be Chris Rock. Will we be content to cruise along on autopilot, or will we scramble and suffer to get better? Will we plod, or will we practice? This book is a guidebook for anyone willing to make the latter choice. There are many full-stop moments in the pages that follow, ideas so interesting that you can't help but pause for a second and consider them. One of those ideas is that practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. For example, you have been shampooing your hair for decades, and yet you are not getting any better at it. As a matter of fact, you will likely die never knowing whether there was a better shampooing technique. The mere fact of doing something repeatedly does not help us improve. What we need is practice, real practice, not mere repetition. As Michael Jordan said, "You can practice shooting 8 hours a day, but if your technique is wrong, then all you become is very good at shooting the wrong way." Practice makes permanent. As kids, we were constantly practicing something: shooting a basketball, playing the piano, learning some Spanish. Those practices could be a drag. It's the rare athlete who can't wait for wind sprints. But because they were thoughtfully designed, they came with a wonderful payoff: the certainty of improvement. From week to week, we couldn't help but get better. How did practice get squeezed out of our lives? Certainly the need hasn't disappeared. Practice is as critical for our performance in the office as it was for the playing field and the concert hall. There's a long list of skills we'd all be wise to hone: how to run a meeting that doesn't drag on, how to listen, really listen, to your spouse, how to get through a stressful commute without barking out profanities. The enemies of practice are pride and fear and self-satisfaction. To practice requires humility. It forces us to admit that we don't know everything. It forces us to submit to feedback from people who can teach us. But surely practice isn't a sign of weakness. After all, some of the people most famously disciplined about practice are Michael Jordan, Jerry Rice, Roger Federer, Mia Hamm, and Tiger Woods. To practice isn't to declare, I'm bad. To practice is to declare, I can be better. And of course, we're all practicing something every day. 24 hours of daily practice. We're practicing the way we interact with our kids and the way we collaborate with our colleagues. The question is, are we getting better? Are we plotting? Or are we practicing? The fact that you bought this book suggests you're a practicer. If so, you've chosen the right handbook. Prepare to get better at getting better. Preface. Why practice? Why now? The three of us are first and foremost teachers, and though this book is for readers in a wide variety of fields, it began some time ago as a book for and about teachers. Still, if you are a parent or a manager or a coach or a mentor or a leader in your organization, you'd have a hard time convincing us you weren't a teacher anyway, so perhaps the book was always destined to become something broader. But in the end, because we are teachers first and foremost, this book tends to see the world from an educator's perspective. So forgive us if we begin by saying something strange about teaching, which is that we are optimistic. Humble, but optimistic. We are optimistic not only because we still believe that the greatest, most gratifying work in the world is teaching someone how to factor a quadratic equation, field a ground ball, run a meeting, read a 19th century novel, or examine an elderly patient with insight and compassion. We are also optimistic because we think that the teaching profession is on the brink of greatness. Teachers around the country feel attacked and cornered in a climate marked, they say, by the overlap of political turmoil and austerity budgets. But when those temporary aberrations fade, we will be left with a series of creative tensions that just may reshape the profession, giving it, for the first time, a clear way to study and learn from itself, and providing it the tools to get better in ways we'd never before considered. This will happen not just through practice, but also in the use of data and analytical tools to find out and capitalize on what teachers do best. Bright spots, in the words of Chip and Dan Heath, whose work inspires us and so many others. We are also humble, though, because we have made many mistakes, several of them public, and some more embarrassing than others, in learning what we think can be a small part of the equation that reframes teaching. We are humbled because we believe humility, constantly facing the likelihood that our work could and should have been better, to be the way to do our work in this world. We are humbled so much that we almost didn't dare write this book, and yet we did, because we think it can help. Within the teaching profession and well beyond. This book is about what the three of us, Doug, Erica, and Katie, learned in responding to the struggle for talent in one very important sector of the economy, public education, and in attacking one very critical social problem, the achievement gap between children of privilege and children of poverty. But it's also about what this experience led us to observe about developing talent in other sectors of our lives and other sectors of society. So, while we believe this book has important lessons for the field of education specifically, and while we often write about examples from our work in schools and in training teachers, we believe it is also relevant to a wide range of organizations and people who want to get better, who must get better. We also think this book is applicable beyond education because we have each gone through the process of applying what we've learned in the hothouse of our professional lives to the world of our personal lives. Having redesigned the trainings we provide for teachers over and over to ring incremental improvement, we constantly see the issues we faced in that struggle as we try to raise our own children to be caring and positive as people and skilled as mathematicians and musicians and soccer players. We see the issues as we try to develop our own skills at skiing and home repair, at knitting, managing people, and, most recently, at writing books. The first step is getting better at getting better. In these cases, we see the role that a humble and overlooked servant could play in spinning straw into gold. That servant is the underestimated concept of practice. Generally seen as mundane and humdrum.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?